The pandemic has taken a toll on economies around the world. Millions of jobs lost, businesses closed, the future in doubt. We want to check in now on how three countries in Asia are doing. Joining us now is NPR's Emily Feng in China's Qinghai province, NPR's Anthony Kuhn in Seoul, South Korea, and the BBC's Arunadeh Mukherjee in Delhi in India. Welcome to all of you. And Emily, let me start with you because China is where the coronavirus originated, as far as we know. Chinese officials say the economy is now in recovery mode. Tell us what it is like there at this point.
Well, right now we're in the middle of a big national holiday. It's essentially China's July 4th, and it's always been a big travel week. This year, travel agencies and the tourism authorities predict that people will take between 550 to 600 million trips this week alone within China, which sounds like a huge number, and it is, but that's about 30% lower than the number last year. That being said, people really feel like things have returned to normal, though many still voluntarily wear masks. I personally have been traveling for work and pleasure in the last 2 weeks, and I've been to tourist sites where streets are so packed you can't move, but you just have to drift with the crowd. I've gone to an electronic music dance rave for work, where people moshed in the thousands. So there is a sense of normalcy now.
And what about the economy there in China? It may be normal in terms of travel within China, but it's very difficult still for people from the outside to come in.
Yes. Well, China looks like it might be the only major economy this year to post positive economic growth. Economists predict now that that might be just around 2% of growth this year. There has been some revenge spending. So, for example, sales of luxury items have skyrocketed here in the last quarter, but consumption is what's been really lagging. It's not recovered as fast as, say, manufacturing or heavy industry, and that's because people on the lowest economic rungs of Chinese society, these temporary migrant workers, people who originate from rural areas, they're really suffering financially and they're still spending less.
And do you ever hear about a case of COVID-19 popping up somewhere in China at this point?
Yes, there were about 20 new cases this week so far, but they're all from people coming in from other countries and entering China.
Hmm. Anthony Kuhn, to you in Seoul, South Korea, it never imposed the sort of nationwide lockdown that has really hurt economies in other countries. But how would you describe the situation at this point where you are?
Well, they've definitely taken an economic hit from the pandemic, but it's a lot less serious than if they hadn't been well prepared for this. They had a plan, which was to do aggressive testing and contact tracing. And because they knew who was infected and where they were able to keep those people separate. Fewer people were infected, and so factories stayed open in general. Millions of people traveled for the recent Mid-Autumn Festival, even though the government suggests they didn't. And as a result, their GDP is probably going to contract about 1% this year, which is better than almost any other developed economy. Compare it to, for example, 5.8% contraction for Japan, 10.5% for Italy. And by one estimate I've seen, it probably would have cost them about twice as much if they had locked down, but they didn't.
And we heard Emily say that some people are voluntarily wearing masks in China. What is life like in South Korea at this point?
Well, it's been, you know, masks here all the time. But people, like elsewhere, people are fatigued. Not everybody is following orders to stay put. And they're just battling down their second wave of infection. So they're doing very well compared to other countries, but it's still difficult.
Let's turn to Delhi and the BBC's Arunadeh Mukherjee. Arunadeh, India is one of the countries that is having the hardest time right now in terms of new cases of COVID-19, in terms of deaths. Tell us what's happening there.
Well, the total number of coronavirus cases in India are now over 6.7 million. The death toll, too, has crossed 100,000. India recording over 70,000 cases in the last 24 hours and nearly 1,000 deaths. The last 1 million cases, in fact, came in a mere 11 days. India is, in fact, very close to overtaking the U.S. and becoming the country with the highest number of COVID-19 cases. And what is even more alarming is that India is entering what is traditionally called the festival festive season here in October. So there is a huge chance of cases spiking because of more congregations at religious, cultural and social gatherings. And the government has just recently, on the 1st of October, eased restrictions on public gatherings. So that is a point of concern. And the government making it very clear that they have to revive the economy despite these figures. And that's why you're seeing restrictions consistently being eased.
And give us a sense of what that means at this point in Delhi. Is everyone wearing a mask? Is there any social distancing at all?
It's very difficult to maintain that, especially because the government has been easing those lockdown restrictions, and there is a sense of lockdown fatigue. Of course, it wasn't the case when India saw the massive 2.5 month lockdown, when people were taking it seriously. But now, when India is seeing over 70,000 cases every day, it's ironic that that kind of seriousness is not there. And it is, and the economy is really bearing the biggest brunt. India's economy contracting by 23.9%, the worst since 1996, and one of the worst among G20 nations. It is being seen as a historic low, and the rising number of cases mean the outlook for the rest of the year is also very grim. And what's important to understand is that the Indian economy was in any case growing at its slowest in the last 6 years, and COVID-19 just came and dealt a body blow to any scope of recovery.
Arunade, are people in India, is there a movement in India that's saying we've got to tighten the restrictions, there's only one way out of this, and that is going to be to really be very restrictive about social distancing, about mask wearing, and let's get this under control? Does that exist?
Well, we're seeing a lot of demands for that coming in from academics from several quarters. But unfortunately, the challenge that we're seeing here is in implementation. We've seen the government come out and issue instructions, week after week, coming out and saying that people must adhere to all the government notifications, wear masks, practice social distancing. But many experts point out that there is a huge gap between what the government is saying and what really is percolating down on the ground. And there is a conflict in messaging, say many experts, because while you're talking about social distancing, while you're talking about the seriousness of the disease spreading at an alarming rate in India, unfortunately, you're also opening up sectors. Just recently, India has now opened up multiplexes, albeit at 50% capacity. But what is the message that is really going out to the citizens is in many pockets that, look, things are actually improving, whereas they're certainly not.
You know, it's kind of stunning to hear what's going on there and then look at what's happening here, where the president of the United States is now infected with coronavirus, as are a number of people in his inner circle. We're seeing, close to 50,000 cases a day and sometimes 1,000 deaths a day. Emily, what's the view of what's happening in the United States from China?
When Chinese people and Chinese leaders look at what's happening in the U.S., it further strengthens their conviction that what were seen as draconian policies at the time to lock down entire cities, to put people into months-long home isolation, that those were the right things to do. People feel increasingly satisfied with how their national leaders have behaved in comparison to how other countries have handled the coronavirus. And so it's bolstered credibility in China.
Mm-hmm. And what about from your perspective in India, Arunade?
It's interesting because the Indian government obviously has been tracking developments very closely, considering the elections, and also, of course, with Kamala Harris being in the fray, it has invited a lot of interest and curiosity here in the country, with many expecting that, or rather wondering whether someone of Indian origin will actually enter the White House after the results of the elections. Prime Minister Modi recently conveyed his thoughts to President Trump when he announced on social media that he had been infected by coronavirus. But in terms of having a conversation about how both countries are doing, I think India and the U.S. have a lot in common in the way in which both have handled, or many say mishandled, the pandemic. Both countries are seeing huge spikes in numbers. India, in fact, could very well very soon overtake the U.S. in just a matter of weeks, going by the numbers we've seen, and claim the spot of the number one country with the maximum number of COVID-19 cases in the world.
And Anthony, what about you? What's the view from Seoul of what's happening in the U.S.?
I think people are shocked. South Korea is a major ally of the U.S. The U.S. is its security guarantor. And this pandemic happens at a time when the alliance is under stress from the Trump administration, which feels that South Korea is not paying enough of defense costs. And so I think the net effect is that it increases the feeling that, South Korea is going to have to stand on its own. And in a way, that makes it feel, I guess, that, the relationship has become more equal in a way.
I'll just finally ask you, Anthony, because you're in South Korea, but it borders North Korea. Do we have any sense at all at this point of what the coronavirus situation is in the borders of very secretive North Korea?
Well, North Korea's ruling Workers' Party recently held a meeting on this, and they said they're not doing as well as they should be, and yet they do not admit to having a single case. The World Health Organization says they have tested thousands of people and all of them have come up negative. And that really goes against what people know about North Korea's track record when they say they have avoided previous epidemics when in fact they have had massive infections and a very rickety healthcare system, which is in no shape to handle it.
That is NPR's Anthony Kuhn in Seoul, South Korea. We've also been speaking with NPR's Emily Feng in Qinghai province in China and the BBC's Arunadeh Mukherjee in Delhi, India. Very interesting to hear about how things are going there in Asia. Thank you so much to all of you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Thank you.